Alpha Golf Zone, agency.
Welcome to this edition of Move to Amend Reports, where we connect you with activists and organizers working on the front lines of the democracy movement to bring you the lowdown on the fight against corporate rule, corporate personhood, and money as speech. This is the space to find the info you need to help pass the We the People Amendment and legalize democracy. I'm your host, Laura Bonham, reporting live from the Wasatch Mountains of Utah. Regular listeners will recognize that Move to Amend Reports has been on an extended hiatus. The original purpose of the hiatus was to give our crew needed time to prepare for and attend our national board meeting, October 14th through 16th. Over the past few months, we've been assessing the podcast and making plans for adjustments. And in the new year, Move to Amend will debut with a completely new format. Until then, the podcast will remain on hiatus and archive show will be replayed between now and January with two major exceptions. Tonight's show, which is a live post-election analysis and discussion on moving forward, and on December 8th, a show exploring the Dakota Access Pipeline resistance organized and led by the largest coalition of Indigenous peoples in recent history. I also want to bid a fond farewell to my friend and fellow co-host, Egberto Willis, who has been with Move to Amend Reports from day one. Egberto has not only been a powerful voice on Move to Amend Reports, he served on the Move to Amend national team for 5 years before stepping down last month. His enthusiastic passion, friendly personality, and grace under pressure will be missed. Egberto's fans can still hear him at the best radio station in Houston, KPFT 90.1, and read his blog at egbertowillies.com. But I'm not without a co-host. Joining me in tonight's post-election review from Sacramento, California, is a co-founder of Move to Amend and our fearless national director, Caitlin Saposi-Belknap.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Laura. I'm happy to be joining you tonight. And what an interesting night to be talking. I'm not sure I've fully digested, but we're going to do our best to begin the conversation.
Well, I know it seems like last night was ages ago. I've been on such an emotional roller coaster today. Time just kind of stood still. So I think there's much to be said about what happened yesterday, which was, I think caught a lot of people by surprise. And normally we devote a segment to news from outside Move to Amend and another segment to news from Move to Amend. But tonight's show is special. The whole show is about what's in the news. And while there's definitely some reeling going on, this election produced some really good news for Move to Amend, the rest of the democracy movement. In reality, it produced some good and significant news for every small D Democrat alive. We're bringing up not one, not two, not three sets of guests tonight. We'll talk with key organizers for California's Proposition 59 campaign, award-winning filmmaker Holly Mosher and Santa Clara County Move to Amend affiliate coordinator Ann Wilson, along with the Initiative 735 campaign, the WAMEN Coalition's campaign director Cindy Black, and Move to Amend Kitsap coordinator and WAMEN team captain Tony Stefnik. Joining us later for a roundtable discussion of the 2016 general elections will be stand-up comedian and host of RT America's Redacted Tonight, Lee Camp, along with independent journalist and artful activist Eleanor Goldfield of Act Out and Rooftop Revolutionaries. So we have a really full show, and we'll kick things off tonight with a quick public service announcement.
Move to Amend's We the People Amendment is the only proposed amendment in Congress that addresses both Supreme Court-created doctrines, corporate personhood, and money as speech, the very foundations of corporate rule. Passing the We the People Amendment is the necessary first step in transforming our democracy to one that truly represents the 99%. go to movetoamend.org/amendment. Read it and take action today.
So our first guest, well, I just first of all want to say that I'm really proud of the guests that we have tonight. They've been working for years on this issue and are real leaders and experts on how to bring this issue to the public. Our first guest played a big role in passing the two statewide ballot measures that support the movement to amend the Constitution and to pass the We the People Amendment. First from California. I want to welcome key organizer for Yes on the Prop 59 campaign and award-winning filmmaker and producer of several important documentaries, including Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes, and Free for All, Holly Mosher, along with Santa Clara County Move to Amend coordinator Ann Wilson, who spearheaded the campaign among California's Move to Amend affiliates to pass Prop 59. And also joining Holly and Ann from Washington State, we welcome the campaign director for WAMEND Coalition, Cindy Black, who directed the Initiative 735 voter campaign and served as secretary for its petition gathering campaign, and Move to Amend affiliate coordinator Tony Stefnik, who served as captain and leader for WAMEND in Kitsap County, working tirelessly for the past couple of years to pass Initiative 735. So Holly, Ann, Cindy, Tony, welcome to this live edition of Move to Amend Reports.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to
Thanks
be
for
here.
Having us.
It's great to have you awesome women here. And we want to talk about your work and experiences through your ballot initiative campaigns. Let's start with Cindy and then Tony from Washington. Tell us a little bit about, we don't have that much time, so I'd love to just hear kind of highlights from you. We've had you on a few times before. Now that it's all done, you know, in terms of what you learned and what most struck you and affected you in this whole effort that you really have, that you've been working on for the last few years. Starting with Tony. I'm sorry, starting with Cindy.
Great, thanks. Great to be on the show tonight, and congratulations to California as well. One of the things that I came away with is that the need for volunteer structure and networking is vital. One of the things that I noticed with our numbers, and we're right around 64%, so those numbers fluctuate a little bit as ballots come in because we're all mail-in states, so there's still ballots that have to be counted. Probably about 34% still need to be counted. So our numbers will fluctuate, but we're right around 64%. But what I noticed, especially in looking at the different counties, is we passed in every single county except for a handful of smaller rural counties in eastern Washington. And in none of those counties we actually had active volunteers. So I walk away knowing that those are vital. You have to have organization and people on the ground in order to be successful. And I think we would have won those counties because we didn't lose by much if we had volunteer base or a little extra money in the budget to do some advertising. So that was one of the biggest things I walked away from this. And the importance of volunteers. I'm just so impressed with everyone, and we couldn't have done it without, like, what, I don't know how many hundreds of volunteers that we had, but that we couldn't have done it without them.
So impressive, the numbers. And Tony, you're from not maybe one of the most rural, but more rural certainly than Seattle, which is where a lot of the population base is in Washington, and have a little bit of a different culture where you were organizing. What are your thoughts and takeaways right now?
Well, yes, I come from Kitsap County. It's dominated by military bases, and it is a semi-rural, more conservative county. But, yeah, when we were signature gathering, you know, my takeaway is that people get this across the political spectrum, even in more rural areas. I would say at least 8 out of 10 people signed our initiative to get it on the ballot. Very few people said no. And I agree with Cindy. I mean, we just really did an amazing job statewide. And we did have a media person on board who, because we didn't have money, we had to be creative in other ways. And he was just absolutely tenacious about going after the editorial boards, especially in areas where we didn't have active teams. And boy, did that pay off. That was definitely a winning strategy. So it was a way for us to get the message out with little or no money and affect the population in that area to help them learn about our issue and get on board.
Awesome. And I'm glad that you all talked about the importance of sort of the ground game and having people on the ground in Washington, because let's turn now to California, where we had a pretty different situation with the initiative not being put on the ballot by volunteers collecting signatures and a citizens initiative effort, but the legislator putting it on the ballot. And we've talked before about the weird situation we found ourselves in where then it was challenged and taken off. And so long story short, we had much less time to organize in California, but we scraped by nonetheless. And so maybe starting with Holly, just in terms of some of your takeaways from working diligently over the last several months in kind of a frantic pace to catch up on how it went for us here.
Yeah, it was really interesting. You know, as hopefully listeners know, just for in California, there was no way to get this on the ballot by signature gathering. That just, it was not possible. We had to go through the legislature. That's just the rule for this type of, you know, voter instruction. So we were at a huge disadvantage as far as, you know, having talked to voters, with lawmen taking two cycles signature gathering. They got, you know, out in the streets talking to people. Whereas we found out on June 8th, the day after the primary, that we were actually going to finally be on the 2016 ballot, you know. And again, after the whole up and down of 2014 being sued off, it was just like, oh my gosh. But of course, by that time, everybody was burnt out and just thinking of the DNC and the RNC and, you know, getting this presidential election. So really ramping up with volunteers, it was very hard to get people's attention until, you know, September that, and get them, you know, to be able to help spread the word. So, you know, as far as our individual efforts, time in the street, you know, and the cost, it was much, you know, we barely had any money between all the groups working on this. So it's amazing that we were able to get 52.3% so far. It could also go up still. So on a shoestring, you know, with 18 million voters, and just really a couple months to reach them, and with all the craziness of this presidential election for attention, and not to mention 17 other ballot initiatives, It was, you know, as soon as we talked to people in person, they would get it. But to get in front of that many people, it was just, you know, we were just really hoping that the message would get out and doing everything we could in such a short, tight time frame. It was very frustrating, you know.
But yeah, I'm glad
we're here, and I want to keep educating. Yeah, we won, and we can keep educating. I mean, that's the thing. I loved talking to voters. I loved when they got it. You know, it didn't take long for them to get it. I only had a few people when I was out street canvassing say, you know, that they were against it. So, you know, with more time, and with this victory behind us, we can keep educating the whole country to the success. Mm-hmm. And we made some great videos that now can be shared. We worked in collaboration with Washington, and we made some videos that I think can help spread the word as to how much progress we've already made.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was helpful to be able to use some of Washington's wind in the sails. And Anne, what would you like to add? You were, Holly's in the southern part of the state, you're in more central and trying to help some of the folks who were organizing in more rural places for Move to Amend. What are your takeaways?
Well, yes, we did have to kind of hit the ground running, and we did. We got together, as we mentioned before, in August with all the affiliates. We spent about $5,000 on literature. We made buttons, flyers, bumper stickers, door hangers, and yard signs, and passed those out, shipped those off to the various affiliates, seven or eight affiliates around the state. We spent some money on advertising. We did some Google ads, and we had a banner ad in the San Jose Mercury News. We got a lot of help from other organizations that we recruited. We went out to get endorsements for from these organizations and then tried to leverage them by asking them to send out their information on Prop 59 to their members. We did some phone banking, canvassing. We tagged along with other campaigns, asking them to include our door hanger, which people seem to like in their literature packs. And again, went out to various events and leafleting, but it was hard to reach. I looked at the LA Times had an or the no, excuse me, the New York Times has an interesting results on the ballot, and it of a total of 8.2 million voters in California, which is hard to reach. 3.9 of them voted against, and we came in at 52%. But the Northern California is a little more liberal. San Francisco came in number one at 76%, and our surrounding counties also running around 60%. And I was very pleased to see that Los Angeles came in as a yes on Prop 59. So Orange County, no. But I didn't realize how close it was going to be honest. I think if I had, I would have been a lot more frantic. But we just did everything we could think of, and I am so pleased that we got it passed.
Well, and it really does just go to show that even with, I mean, I don't think people really understand what it is to run a ballot initiative in California, and the fact that we had, you normally can't win a ballot initiative with the funds and resources that we had. And, you know, we certainly stretched them as far as you possibly could. Every single person, you know, was stretching it. But at the same time, our issue, even though, you know, it wasn't as resounding of a victory, I think that's only because we weren't able to reach more people. And I also thought it was interesting that this is the first state. Colorado, my understanding is, you know, maybe could have done more outreach to Latino voters in California or in Colorado, but that didn't happen so much when Colorado did their ballot initiative. But we were really aware that that's a base in California that can't be ignored. Holly, I'm curious about, you know, just kind of what we found in trying to look at Latino voters in California and to explain and bring this issue to them.
Well, we did find that they start. Yeah, we did find that they start at a very high understanding of this, you know, starting at like 59% in the poll, you know, if they know about us. So we actually did a bunch of the coalition members came together and got on some of the Latino slates because they are 25% of voters in California. So we knew that that was important, and we knew we just didn't have the ground game, you know, with the number of volunteers we have, you know, for this whole giant state. So we thought that was important. That was an important buy to get in front of the Latinos and make sure that they knew about this. Because, you know, it really is such a significant percentage of our population.
Mm-hmm. And I think we got some good stuff that's in Spanish now, too, to utilize potentially in other places mm-hmm. that we just hadn't had a chance to put together as a movement in this country yet.
Yeah.
Laura, do you have, I've been kind of taking over since I've been working with both of these two campaigns, but don't want to ask all the questions.
No problem. I want to go back to the wins, which are huge. You know, oftentimes in discussions like these, you'll ask the question, you know, what could we have done better? And maybe you all have some ideas what you could have done better. But I have to say, considering what you accomplished both in both camps with mainly a volunteer force and not a lot of money, I'm not sure there's much that you could have done better, seeing as you won. But I am throwing that out there. Are there things that you think you could have done better to stretch money further, or ideas that you would have liked to have implemented but couldn't just for simple capacity reasons, things like that?
We spent a lot of time working, not a lot, but a fair amount of time working on social media. And when it came to Twitter, we all looked at each other and said, what is that? And I think that there is a huge number of people out there in the general, I mean, most of us are in older generation and, you know, using more conventional contact, phone banking even is sort of conventional, but that there's this other way to reach the kids or the younger generations that we need to get incorporated into our kind of mainstream scenario. And if we found that, you know, people were trying to figure out how to, well, I just keep using Twitter because that's what we talked about so much, that it really requires, that's the kind of thing you have to pay for, too, is because people are working full-time on Twitter, spending all day on it, you know, interacting with people. And so I think those are areas where we could improve.
Although Holly did do a lot of work there, you know, I don't know if you want to maybe speak to that a little bit, because I think that for a lot of Move to Amend space and sort of the larger base, maybe that is a mystery, but we didn't ignore Twitter.
Yeah, we actually had weekly Twitter storms. It was, you know, we were building and getting more and more people involved each week, which was great. So we did have a presence, but if we had more volunteers across the country joining us, we could, you know, if people could take the time now and to get on Twitter and learn a little bit about it, it doesn't take that much to reach a lot of people and directly have conversations with people and reporters. And so going forward, I think the movement can use these tools, and we've started to create a base. So I think, you know, looking forward, that, and then the other thing I would say that we could do is continue with getting the pledges from Congress members now that we have passed. So we want to hit the ground running with, you know, now that we've passed, you should sign the pledge to do what your constituents said, and that they want an amendment. And then the other thing about messaging, I feel like we were also at a loss with just not enough of the regular voters knowing about Citizens United. So having the bill be called the Overturn Citizens United Act, I think maybe something like Taking Back Our Democracy or, you know, something that it was confusing, because you think, well, Citizens United is a good thing if you just read it and you don't know what it is. So I think there's things that the movement can learn as the obstacles when we were out talking to voters who are not as aware as we are, who are working in the movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for those comments. We are almost out of time, unfortunately. So let's let the Washington folks weigh in. What final comments do you want to share with our listeners who might be interested in getting involved, and not only in the Washington campaign, but in lifting up a state ballot effort? We only have a couple minutes.
Okay, this is Cindy. I'll go quick. So basically what I would do more of is continue the organization and the ground game. I think people need to know about this repeatedly. I think they need exposure to it repeatedly so they will get the message. I echo a lot of what other people have said. Even though we did it for 3 years, people still, after you talk to them, still weren't aware of the issue. So I think that needs to continue. And going forward, we're going to be using California's idea about adopting an elected official. We're going to implement that program, and so we can keep our officials accountable. And then also just continue moving forward and keeping our young people active, as well as the people that have been around for a while, because that's very important. I agree with Ann what she said about bringing young people in. That's essential. Tony may want to add a couple other things as well.
Well, one of the things that I learned when we were on the ground speaking with voters, there was a lot of discouragement out there, and we've certainly seen that in the election results. The most encouraging things when we spoke with people was like, look, you know, 17 states, for a year and a half, we said 16 states have already done this. And red and blue alike, and we're just wanting to become number 17. And then, you know, here now we're going to become number 18. So when the voters heard that, something changed. Their eyes lit up as if there was some hope there for change. And I know, you know, some people may feel uncomfortable about reaching across political lines, but one of the things that we did was we had some folks go up and work the Trump rally here in Washington, and it was actually unbelievably supportive. Thankful that we had this initiative, and I think that that helped us. So reaching across party lines, don't be afraid to do that. Here in Washington, we had a pretty strong Republican showing in our state houses, and yet we had the vote for this initiative that we did. So people get this across party lines.
Thank you so much for that, Tony. And Cindy, Tony, Holly, and congratulations on your victories, and thank you all for your hard work and your leadership. And looking forward to continuing to work with you, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And I second that. Well done.
Before we go on, I do want to... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Could I just share? I just want to let listeners know that our film Pay to Play is actually online for free, and that's a great way to wake people up. We just figured people need to understand what's happening, and they can go to saveourelections.org and then just put in the coupon code that we have, and we're keeping it online for free for a while because we just, you know, we've got to educate people.
Thank you so much, Holly.
And you can go to wamend.org for ours still, WAMEND.org, if you want more information and get involved.
Thank you all, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon in various ways. And before you go on, Laura, with our next segment, I just want to give a shout-out and congratulations to some municipalities that also passed ballot initiatives last night. Shaker Heights, Ohio, passed our initiative with 81.7% of the vote. South Euclid passed with 77.3% of the vote. Both of those communities are in Ohio. In Wisconsin, volunteers passed measures in 18 communities, including many conservative towns. As we know, Wisconsin went red last night, but all over the state, initiatives passed with overwhelming majorities. Rock County, 86%, Reedsburg, 86%, Mattawak, 81%, Delafield, 79%, Nishikoro, 88%, Nuglaris, 88%, Spring Valley, 91%, Mount Horeb, 84%. I won't read through all of them. There's 18, several of them in the 80s and 90s, nothing below 65% support. So Move to Amend, definitely one big, not just in California and Washington. And we've seen that in almost every single place. Unfortunately, we did have our first ballot initiative loss last night. I hate to say that, but we should acknowledge it, especially because the folks in Newark, Ohio, worked really hard and they came close, 45.5% of the vote support, but weren't able to get to that 50% plus one. But still, a lot of education work done there, and we did have to, you know, probably lose one sometime. So, with so many initiatives on the ballot, we won almost all of them, and that was thanks to all the tireless work and effort by pretty much almost all volunteers. There were a couple of paid folks in Washington who were dedicating 100% of their time, and in California too. But really, this was a grassroots effort last night, as it has been every other year that we've been in existence and putting these initiatives on the ballot every election cycle.
Great. So, you know, it's nice to hear some good news. I think we all need it. We'll be back after this public service announcement with Lee Camp and Eleanor Goldfield for their post-election analysis.
Are you part of a faith or ethical community whose values and principles are being violated by corporate actions? We, the people of the Move to Amend Interfaith Caucus, share in common a variety of values and principles. In this unity, we find the short-sighted and single-minded drive for profits by certain corporations has led to the degradation of the environment and our society. Corporate power has come to dominate our existence, with the values and principles we all hold dear being routinely violated by powerful corporations using their so-called personhood to influence elections, legislation, regulations, and judicial outcomes in their favor and at our expense. It is the purpose of the Interfaith Caucus to engage faith and ethical communities and educate about how the work of ending corporate rule can be approached from a spiritual, ethical, or religious perspective. Working together at national, state, local, and faith community levels, we can pass the We the People Amendment. Join us on our monthly calls the third Wednesday of each month at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern at 888-602-8443. visit movetoamend.org/interfaith-caucus for more information.
All right. So
help raise awareness about the movement to amend the Constitution by hosting your own house party for democracy. Invite family, friends, and neighbors for a screening of our mini-documentary, Legalize Democracy. To find the film and learn how to get started with your house party, visit movetoamend.org/houseparties. That's one word, movetoamend.org/houseparties.
You're listening to our live edition of Move to Amend Reports, bringing you the post-election analysis from the 2016 elections, and I imagine we'll probably continue it on beyond just this show. I'm really anxious to bring up our next two guests, Lee and Eleanor, but before we go on to that, I do want to put on my national director hat and report on the successes of our Pledge to Amend campaign. Both the folks in Washington and California actually mentioned kind of the effort beyond Election Day. Once we get an initiative passed, then the way to make it actually mean something beyond just a symbolic or plea to Congress to do something is actually to hold folks' feet to the fire and say, this is what your constituents want, make it happen. And we've been working on that effort for a number of years now. We call it Pledge to Amend. So this is a campaign that we do in election years targeting candidates who are running for office and asking what their position is on our amendment and what they will do, whether they will use their office to move the amendment forward, whether they're running for city council or school board or state assembly or Senate of the United States and everything in between. And also, you know, what they think of Citizens United so that the voters can be informed as to where the candidates who are seeking to represent them stand. And then once they pledge, then we have to make sure that they follow through. So we're still definitely doing the analysis. We had hundreds of candidates who took the pledge to amend this year, and we're really happy with the growth of that campaign, and we will definitely continue it on. In non-election years, it becomes more of a citizen lobbying effort for folks who are in office. But we're still kind of figuring out, you know, who won and where we stand. But thanks to Aaron and Garrett, two of our awesome interns who were working today, we do know that we have at least 22 members of the House of Representatives who were either reelected or newly elected who are not co-sponsors of the We the People Amendment yet, but who took our pledge to amend. And I want to let folks know who they are because they might be your representative and they might be your representative already, but they also might be newly coming in. So in California, we have Ami Berra, who's in District 7, and Judy Chu. Oops, sorry, actually, my bad. Judy Chu is already a co-sponsor, so she was reelected, and we expect her to come on as a co-sponsor again because each new Congress, we need to actually reintroduce all legislation, including amendments. So House Joint Resolution 48 will be reintroduced in Congress next year. So we have Ami Berra and Nanette Berrigan of District 44, who both really need to come on as co-sponsors next year, and I hope folks who live in those districts will help us help them make it happen. In Connecticut, Jim Hines. In Florida, Stephanie Murphy. In Hawaii, Colleen Hanabusa. In Illinois, Jan Schlakowski and Brad Schneiner. In Maryland, C.A. Dutch Ruppersberger. In Massachusetts, Seth Moulton. In Michigan, Debbie Dangle. In New Hampshire, Carol Shee Porter. In New Jersey, Bonnie Watson. In New Mexico, Michelle Lujan Grissom. In New York, Thomas Susi. In New York, Paul Tonka and Brian Higgins. In North Carolina, David Price. In Texas, Jean Green. In Washington, Pramila J. Paul. And just want to acknowledge that she's the first Indian American woman to be elected to the House of Representatives. And then we have a number of our current co-sponsors who won again. And I do also just want to mention Rick Nolan, who is our lead who was our champion in the House of Representatives, and he won with 50% of the vote. He barely squeaked by with 2,000 votes, and much of the reason why is because Rick Nolan's seat was one of the most expensive races this election cycle. He and actually Ami Bera were tied with each kind of FEC reporting for whose opponent was spending the most money to try and unseat them. But both of them were actually reelected, and they're both pledged to amenders with Rick Nolan as our champion in Minnesota. And so we know that he will be reintroducing the amendment, and we're glad that he's in Congress again to be able to do that. And I also just want to name Tammy Duckworth, who is a pledged to amender, but she is not a co-sponsor yet. She currently sits in the House of Representatives in Illinois, but she was elected to the Senate. And so we don't currently have House joint resolutions equivalent in the Senate. One of our goals in our strategic plan next year is to have a Senate introduction. Senate, it's a lot harder to get legislation introduced in the Senate, especially if it's not expected to move forward with passage, you know, in the current Congress. And so that was to be expected, that it would take a little bit longer there, and there are a lot less senators to work with. But potentially Tammy Duckworth, to all our Illinois folks, I hope you will help us. We're a little bit concerned about how she's a pledge to amend signer, but actually hasn't made good. And so this will be her opportunity now that she's a senator. And
can I ask a quick question about this, about Duckworth? So for folks in Illinois, is it worth the time for them to get her to sign on as the member of Congress during this lame duck session as sort of a legacy moment, a direction to the member who's going to fill her seat, and mm-hmm. also then to apply pressure to get her to carry it as a sponsor in the Senate?
Yeah, well, I wanted to actually, that was where I wanted to go next, and that's a good segue using her as an example. So over the next couple weeks, Congress is not really scheduled to be in session for very much longer, only a couple weeks between now and the end of the year. But they will be back in D.C., and they actually need to fund the government again, so they'll definitely be there doing that at a minimum. And we have 28 representatives that we're targeting for the 28th Amendment between now and the end of the year to try to bring our total co-sponsorship number at least up to 25. We're at 23 right now, with Tulsi Gabbard having committed but not yet formally done it, because you can only add co-sponsors when Congress is in session. And so we expect that she will be doing so when Congress comes back in session. She committed to our Hawaii affiliates that she would be doing so. So we're at 24, really, and our goal this year is 25 to keep our pace, and we really want to get there. So there are 28 members of the House of Representatives that we would like to have phone calls and potentially meetings in December if they won't come on in this last week of November when they'll be back. And Tammy Duckworth is one of those, and she was already on our list. So I think absolutely let's not let her off the hook and wait until 2017. The time to talk to her is right now. And there are a few other outgoing House members who are on that list for the same reason as well. If they will come on now, especially those who are retiring and are being replaced by somebody else who's in their party who they blessed for their open seat, then we certainly could use their leadership to show the way for whoever's coming in to replace them. So if you live in those 28 districts, expect to see emails from Move to Amend over the next week asking you to make phone calls. And we need everybody to do that, because we need everyone to really take this Pledge to Amend campaign seriously. These ballot initiatives that we're running that show what the will of the voters is, again, the place where it really has teeth is if we get commitments from those elected representatives, and then those who refuse to follow the will of their constituents, we actually have to make that mean something. So Pledge to Amend is kind of the bridge for that, and is a great way for folks to get involved. And you don't have to do as much work as, you know, Cindy and Holly and Tony and Ann. You can just help us make some phone calls and potentially set up some meetings. But it makes a big difference, we have heard from folks in Congress. And we actually do have, you know, these these 22 new folks that have already committed, and there's a handful of other ones who had committed last year who still haven't come on. So help us target them.
And that's the Pledge to Amend campaign. You can find more out about that at movetoamend.org. And moving along, we're now going to bring up Lee and Eleanor and our discussion over the 2016 election season and talk about our next steps for the year ahead. This is the point where we're inviting our listeners to ask questions during this conversation. So if you have a question, dial 646-652-2345 and press 1 after the prompt. The number again, 646-652-2345.
To add real substance to our post-election analysis, I'm really thrilled to introduce writer and stand-up comedian Lee Camp, the host of RT America's political talk show Redacted Tonight, providing irreverence and unfiltered analysis during the 2016 campaign, which has made it more tolerable, and looking forward to that continuing. And with him on the phone from Washington, D.C. is independent journalist and artful activist Eleanor Goldfield, the host of Free Speech TV's Act Out and frontwoman for the political hard rock band Rooftop Revolutionaries. I'm so thrilled to have you both here. Welcome to the show, Lee and Eleanor.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm not sure, actually. We're really happy about Move to Amend, but there's a lot to digest here.
Which is
I think that's everybody's answer with how you're doing this. We don't know.
I just finished watching the series The Walking Dead. That's how I am.
Yeah, I said recently that at some point during this election cycle, we realized The Walking Dead future was not the worst case scenario.
Yeah, right.
Man.
So as many of us remain in shock at the results from last night, what's your take on the election? Lee, please start, and Eleanor, join in.
My take is that, for one thing, and this is not being talked about much, it was stolen from Hillary. I'm not a Hillary fan. I'm not a Trump fan. But Hillary did win the election. And Greg Palast has been doing extensive reporting on this, a journalist for the BBC, New York Times bestselling author. He's reported on Interstate Crosscheck, which is a voter suppression system that knocked over 1 million people off the rolls in swing states, largely minorities. And that wasn't the end of the suppression and purging of votes. So it seems that Hillary did win this. I mean, we're not going to be told that, but that's the reality of it. And then beyond that, I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I think the number one blame, or maybe one of the top spots, goes to the mainstream media for simply giving Trump an endless array of airtime. I mean, $5 billion of free advertising throughout this primary, over double what they gave Hillary Clinton, and it didn't matter that a fair amount was negative. When you are told about something all day, every day, that's what people think about, that's what's in their head, that's what's echoing around. And so the mainstream media absolutely created this demogorgon that they've now unleashed on us. And now I'll pass it off to Eleanor.
I mean, I pretty much echo the sentiment that Lee just stated. I, along with everybody else, thought that Hillary was going to win, but I think we all underestimated how unpopular she really was, even though she ironically won the popular vote. I think the problem is that the DNC failed. They moved so far right that they completely left all of the progressives and even centrists out to dry. And they put up a corporate shill, a war hawk, a fan of fracking, of GMOs, of interventionism around the world, and a lot of people just could not make that call. And there was a really compelling article in Truthdig earlier today that basically said that Trump won because Hillary just wasn't good enough, and Trump won because he railed against the status quo, and Hillary is the status quo. And of course, it's totally misguided. It's like slapping a person that witness you get into a car crash as opposed to the person who got into a car crash with you. Completely misguided anger, but it's still anger at the status quo and at the system, and that's what Hillary represents. And so people, primarily white, middle to lower class voters, decided that they were going to go with the person that rallied against the status quo, and that's what they did, and it was completely wrong. But on the other hand, Hillary is also very wrong. And my hope here, which I mentioned in sort of an offhand comment months ago, is perhaps this is just what America needed, not only to come squarely face-to-face with how racist, how sexist, and how bigoted we are, but also to come to face-to-face with apathy and realize that we're the ones who let this happen. Yes, it's the two-party system's fault, but who allowed that to perpetuate? It's our fault, the people, and our apathy and our sort of disdain for politics is what allows people like Trump and Clinton to rise to this level. So I think it's really on us to look at ourselves and say, how are we going to stop this from happening, and how are we going to deal with what we have now?
Mm-hmm. I was watching – I've been doing a lot of – I haven't watched any mainstream TV at all. I can't stomach it. You know, today of all days, I can't stomach it. But I have done extensive reading all day long and watching videos on the internet. And I watched a statement from Keith Olbermann about this whole thing, and the title of his YouTube, I can't remember it word for word, but he was saying that, you know, the terrorists that took down the Twin Towers have, you know, this election is what is how they've won, that they've torn the fabric of the nation apart, the terrorists that took down the Twin Towers. Any commentary about that angle? I thought that was a very interesting angle to take.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the comparisons to 9/11, but I think that's ignorant because we could have gone another path after 9/11. We could have gone a path that saw us benefiting from the love we felt from the rest of the world after 9/11. And instead, we went the path of going farther to the right, bombing countries that we have no business being in, killing innocent people, thereby creating more terrorists. And then you end up with a Democratic Party that is a Republican Party. I mean, they represent all the things the Republicans represented 20, 30 years ago. So, to blame it on that change in the country by the terrorists, by 9/11, I think is misplaced, because it's leaving all the fault off of the DNC for pulling so far to the right that they can't put up someone that is appreciated in the slightest by the American people.
Well, not only that, but it perpetuates this sort of fear-mongering mentality that mainstream media is so good at. They are basically just a fear factory. And of course, I wasn't expecting them to wake up this morning and have a modicum of self-awareness as to what they helped create with Trump. It's a lot easier to say that 9/11, I mean, it's almost become like that guy on the History Channel, because aliens, like, because 9/11 is the answer for everything. Like, why did this happen? Because 9/11. It's like, why did Trump win? It's not because we fucked up and we're a shill for corporate America and we gave stage time to a guy who wasn't even there. They showed footage of Trump's empty podium when he wasn't even there yet. They're like, oh, Trump is expected to speak soon. It's like, there's nothing else happening in the world except for a shot of his empty. I mean, it's a lot easier to say that, you know, the terrorists did this, and it just perpetuates this sort of fear-mongering that gets people to say, oh, well, maybe Trump will make us safe because he wants to amp up the military and he wants to bomb the crap out of ISIS. People will look at what he just said and be like, well, this is why we need to have that happen.
Yeah, I'm glad you both brought it back to that, because on top of the sort of corporate media giveaway to Trump in terms of airtime and attention, we found out from the leaked emails that the Clinton campaign very cynically basically was trying to play with fire by encouraging and asking the media and their own campaign to try and use Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and Ben Carson, basically,
yeah,
you know, the extreme, to try and make Hillary look better. And, you know, they got a It's just unbelievable. It's like, you guys played with fire and now you burned all the rest of us. Thanks a freaking lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, the email said they wanted to prop up Donald Trump among some of the others to pull that party farther to the right. And their goal was, oh, well, then we'll end up with someone who's easy to beat, so therefore Hillary Clinton can win. I mean, they were kind of thinking that's the only way she can win, is if they have some very far right, you know, and they ended up with a neo-fascist. But and she still failed. I mean, the idea is you had a candidate who was so unlikable and with so many skeletons in her closet, you know, millions of dollars being brought through various shell companies and the Clinton Foundation from foreign governments and weapons deals, and you have all that riding on her, and to be like, that's what needs to be our next president, and that's our best shot at winning this thing, and we're going to, you know, commit suppression and fraud to make sure Bernie Sanders does not become the nominee in order to put in our candidate. You know, it's completely on them that they put someone like that as their best hope to win the presidency.
And to do that, to basically acknowledge that they understood and that they knew that, you know, white, as Eleanor said, white, you know, largely middle class or working class America was angry. So they were well aware of that. You know, they weren't trying to say let's appease the anger in any way. It was, okay, let's use this anger in the most cynical fashion, not address any of the concerns, but instead just try to, you know, bait dog whistlers, basically, and see how that all works out.
Yeah, and I mean, her biggest talking point, I think, in a lot of her campaign was we can't trust him with the nuclear codes or be afraid of him. And it's like, that's a fine point, but you need to stand for more than that to get votes. I mean, if you want people to stand up strongly with you and really want to get you elected, then you have to stand for something. And the Democratic establishment largely does not stand for anything anymore. They say things, but then they do the opposite, or the opposite is done quietly in the, you know, or they're taking money from the opposite interest. So when people are saying something and doing the opposite, it's like, if you don't stand for anything, what is it that people are getting behind?
Well, I actually think that they do stand for something. They stand for what you'd think a Republican would stand for. Hillary was a great example of a classic Republican candidate. She was pro-war, pro-interventionism, pro-fracking, pro-GMO. I mean, there's just a long list of things that she basically was allied with.
Pro-Walmart, against minimum wage.
She stood by her husband's anti-welfare bill. You know, we all know the super predators line. So,
the Clinton Foundation.
The Clinton. I mean, she was her cozy ties with Saudi Arabia, and she has the gall to stand up there and say that women's rights are human rights. Go fuck yourself. I mean, this is like, she is just a classic grade A Republican candidate. And when your party puts up somebody like that and completely decimates somebody like Bernie through backhanded corruption, then I'm sorry, you don't deserve anybody's vote. And that's basically what happened. So many people either wrote in Bernie or voted third party or just refused to go to the polls or wrote in like their mom or something. And while I don't necessarily agree with everybody's choices on how they decided to make that turn, I can't blame them for wanting to turn away from a Republican candidate in a Democratic Party.
We do have a question. Anne asks, so what can we do now to help? Where do we go from here is basically what I hear her saying.
Well, there's several things. One thing is, I think, local issues, local elections, you know, become an expert on something that you really want to have an impact in. And, you know, you guys were reading off the list of local wins or smaller wins, and those were important, and people fought hard for those, and that's how you make a difference. And obviously Move to Amend is incredibly important. We wouldn't be in this situation in the government as a whole if we didn't have so much money in politics. And I've tried to create something. It's just getting off the ground, called cleanmoneycandidates.org. People can check that out, where we're going to continue to build a list of candidates that refuse to take corporate money. And hopefully one day people will ask, does that candidate have certification for clean money? Are they clean money certified? And if they're not, then why should I vote for them? So that's the goal there. And I think there's a lot of places to fight that are not the presidential horse race. I mean, we are the presidential horse race is used to distract us from so many issues. There's so much in this world that is so important that is not the presidency. And meanwhile, I mean, the mainstream media is not even talking about Standing Rock. The alternative media is, the mainstream media is not. And what are they distracting us with? The horse race. And yes, the presidency is important, but it's not so important that Donald Trump should get $5 billion of free airtime. Meanwhile, we're never going to mention Standing Rock as an example, or Black Lives Matter on a daily basis. Like, there's so much going on that's important and happening now, and people can definitely get active.
And I think also I mentioned this in my show this morning that I gave people a challenge. Go sign up for an action. And I know that there are a lot of people in the streets right now, and that's fantastic, but my fear is that it will wear off after a couple of days and people will just be like, well, I went to that one protest and I can check to the box. Sign up for something that's happening next week. And I use the example of the Flush the TPP actions that are happening in Washington, D.C. There's going to be a lot of actions surrounding trying to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership from coming up in a lame duck session. But it could be whatever you're passionate about. It could be like a move to amend House Party. It could be GMOs, fracking. There's so many pipeline projects that are happening. There's probably one close to you, less than 100 miles, that you might not even know about. Activate yourself. And that is the challenge that I've put out to people. Sign up for an action, or heaven forbid you actually organize one yourself. And get people involved, and as Lee said, do it on a local level.
I do want to remind folks we're coming up on time, but we've also said that maybe we could go a little bit late, at least those of us who are hosting, just to kind of keep it open if folks want to. So the number to call if you have a question or want to weigh in here is 646-652-2345, and you can press 1 after the prompt to let us know that you want to join the conversation or ask a question. And I also just want to, I think it would be really bad if we had this conversation and didn't also name that, you know, there are a number of people who are justifiably feeling very unsafe and concerned about what will happen given what Trump has said in terms of folks that he's going to target. And so I think it's important that folks with privilege, and there's layers there in terms of having privilege, and some you may have privilege in some ways but not in others, but really need to, you know, turn to those who are most likely to be targeted. I mean, Pence is a terrifying human, and the plans that they have for the LGBTQ community based on what he's wanted to do in Indiana, certainly Muslims, immigrants of all stripes, potentially Jewish folks. I mean, the list is long that have come under attack, people of color, all colors. And so we need to make
women.
Sure that we're, yes, women, thank you. The list is so long. and I don't want to gloss over anyone because so many people are affected in multiple ways in that list. And we need to make sure that we are making clear and visible safe space for anyone who comes under attack. It's hard to say what Trump will really do, but if nothing else, there are a number of supporters. I don't think all of his supporters are outright white supremacists at all. A lot of people clearly were very kind of uncomfortable with that, who still voted for him. But they have been those white supremacists that have been lurking and are emboldened at their outrage at an Obama, black presidency, are feeling like they can come out of the shadows, and that potentially this is, that's what we're doing when we're making America great again, actually making it a place for white people. So what are we going to do about that?
Well, I mean, I certainly agree with the sentiment. I mean, obviously we need to stand up for our own communities and protect those that are less privileged or targeted in some way. I don't think we do ourselves any benefit by assuming there'll be immediate targeting of people. I think we do need to wait and see what ends up happening after January, because I think if you create just excessive fear in people, they act rashly and rather than rationally. And so yeah, obviously stand up for your community. And, you know, there's far more of us that, and I don't just mean Hillary voters or people that did not vote for Trump, but even including Trump voters, there's far more of us that care about each other, don't, you know, aren't going to hate someone for their skin color or their sexual preference. And most of America is clearly that. And I think we can stand together, you know, whether you have a demagogue at the top of the White House or not.
You know, we have a couple more questions coming in for callers, and I just wanted to add my two cents to this question about what can we do now to help. And I think it's also important to recognize that there is a midterm election in just 2 short years. And you named, Lee, you named a couple of organizations that have candidates. We have our Pledge to Amend candidates. I mean, starting to focus on turning the House and the Senate over in the next election is really an important step that needs to happen too, because we have the Supreme Court in play and things like that as well in terms of blocking Trump. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And we're going to, Eugene asks us, what do you think about the Green Party movement and how do we come together over the next 4 years?
Well, coming together over the next 4 years is always, it's kind of like a million-dollar question. I think the left needs to stop infighting, for sure. I mean, I've gotten a barrage of terribly misinformed hate towards Jill Stein and the Green Party, and that's what it is. It's misinformed hate. Blaming Jill Stein, again, it's like that same analogy. It's slapping the witness to your car crash instead of yelling at the person who actually got into a car crash with you. Instead of blaming Hillary and the corrupt DNC, people are blaming Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka for actually putting up a platform that works for people and planet over profit. So I'm a big fan of Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka and what they stand for. I've always been wary of saying anything too strong about a party in general, because I feel like these diehard party ideologies are what get us into these conundrums in the first place. That being said, I am supportive of the Green Party on almost everything. But again, I think we need to get back to the point where we looked at candidates and we looked at people. I mean, if there was a Republican that was running with a platform that looked green for some ridiculous reason, I'd be like, okay, well, I guess I'm voting Republican. We need to stop this go blue no matter what or go whatever. It's like that's absurd. You need to look at the people and what they stand for and that how that aligns with the progress that we need to make as a country. And as far as coming together, the left needs, I mean, the partiers are laughing their asses off because they think it's hilarious that we're just over here throwing stones at each other and getting all this misinformation about Jill Stein did this and the Russians are doing this. It's like, shut up. The problem is that the left is splintered because we are constantly throwing stones at each other and not looking at the right and looking at the backwards trajectory of our country as it stands right now. And we need to put away these differences and unite and really look at things as they are. Look at the facts. Don't be swayed by what you think is liberal media. Don't be swayed by MSNBC. Look at the numbers. You know, look at what actually happened in 2000 with Nader. Look at what actually happened yesterday with Jill Stein and Baraka. Look at what these people stand for, and then see what actually is progressive. And that to me is the only way that the left can really correlate and move forward.
Lee, do you want to add anything to that in terms of the Green Party movement?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Greens can be very important, and a lot of them stand for really great things. But I also agree with the sentiment that the two-party system is dead or dying, and therefore you can't look at someone's party. I mean, Bernie Sanders had less in common with most of the Democrats on that original debate stage than he had in common with, say, Rand Paul, who didn't have anything in common with the rest of the Republicans on the debate stage. So these parties don't really mean anything anymore, and the establishment Democrats don't really stand for anything anymore, and the Republicans despise Trump largely. So the parties, I mean, I don't mean Republican voters, I mean establishment Republicans. And so the parties don't mean anything anymore, and we have to get out of that because it is it's forcing people to vote ways they don't want to vote, and, you know, you should be voting for someone who stands for what you stand for. And I think that's where we have to get to. And, of course, to have a legitimate vote, then we can also get into – we can segue to the topic of our elections are continuing to be stolen, and it amazes me that we're willing to allow it through all these years. The computers are completely unverifiable. In Ohio, another story that I covered that I also got from Greg Palast reporting was that the Ohio voting machines now have ballot protection software. Great. Sounds good, right? Exciting. They turned them all off. They turned off all the ballot protection software that would take an image of every ballot cast. They were brought to court last week by a lawyer, Bob Fitrakis, who's done this for years, to try and force them to turn on the ballot protection software, and the judge sided with the state and said, no, they don't have to turn on the ballot protection software. So Ohio spent all this money on these new machines with this software and refused to turn it off. And that's the world we're living in. So we need a verifiable voting system. We need, obviously, to get money out of politics, and we need to get rid of the fucking stupid Electoral College, which, for people that liked Hillary, she would be the president right now if we didn't have the Electoral College.
Yeah, I do want to let folks know one of our partners, Liberty Tree, has had a campaign, No More Stolen Elections, for a while, and so if folks are concerned about what Lee is talking about, you can find more information about how to address that at nomorestolenelections.org. And I also just want to, for a sec, go back to the Green Party question, because one of the things that I was struck by looking at what was happening last night is that actually, if you look at it, it seems like most of the Sanders supporters actually did what they were told that they had to do and voted for Hillary. I mean, the Stein campaign and even the Johnson campaign, compared to where they were polling and what Americans were saying going into the election day, that, you know, they wanted to see third parties and people were considering voting for an alternative party. That didn't actually end up happening the way that people thought that it would and the way that people were saying that they would. And so even with, you know, basically the fear that the DNC and Democratic Party leadership put into progressives around Trump, I mean, their strategy that they said that they were going to employ, they were employing it, and it worked in a sense. The Green Party vote could have been much, much bigger based on where people were feeling, you know, even a month ago. And yet the election was still lost by Hillary Clinton. And so whether it's the Green Party or some other alternative, I just, you know, I've been a Green ever since I could register to vote, and I feel very strongly that I'm about how I'm not a Democrat, but I hope that people actually, as you were saying, Eleanor, look at the situation and what actually happened and understand that it's a failed strategy that the Democratic Party is leading. And so if that's what they're going to offer continuously, it's going to work as long as people buy it and follow through. Because at this point, the Democratic Party cares more about participating in the process than they do about winning the presidency. And so if that's where you want to be led, you know, then we'll get a bunch of 2016 elections before us. We do have another question, and we're a bit over time, and it's late for you guys, but wondering if anyone has any insight on this. Michelle asks, what about the upcoming Supreme Court appointments? Is there any way to save that? Lee or Eleanor, any thoughts there?
One thought I had today is everyone's flipping out about the Supreme Court, and it occurred to me the guy who died was Scalia, so he's gonna probably replace him with another Scalia. So yeah, it's gonna be the same way it was, but that's not the end of the world. That's how it was. It was 5-4 right wing. So I think it's a little premature to just lose your mind about the Supreme Court. It's going to be back to how it was before Scalia, who was relatively young, died randomly. So, you know, there's that. And then I think that, yeah, people are getting a little too up in arms about that.
And I also would like to point out that with regards to Hillary, Hillary was good friends with Powell, Lewis Powell, who crafted the Powell memo. that called for an activist Supreme Court to basically destroy socialist, or not socialist, but social justice movements. Everything from the Black Panthers to protests on college campuses, and replacing media with a right wing and a business friendly media, replacing professors at colleges with a more right wing business friendly professorship. I mean, this guy is largely to thank for the how our country turned during the 70s. So, and that was a friend of Hillary's,
and a Democrat himself.
Right, exactly. And Hillary has a long list of friends like that. So this idea that Hillary would have opted for some behemoth of a liberal god is just so ridiculous. I mean, she would have voted for, she would have gotten somebody that was a conservative, just like herself. And, you know, as Lee mentioned, the Supreme Court has been conservative, and not that we did great, but we survived. And I'd also like to point out that in the past, the Supreme Court has stood in the way of progress when it came to Black rights and women's rights. We had to pass amendments. That falls on us, we the people. The Supreme Court has stood in the way of progress, and the only answer to that is us standing up and being like, you know what, fuck the nine of you. We're going to go over here and do this instead.
Well said.
Thank you.
And before we go on, we're going to play a PSA for you.
You can support Move to Amend reports and other Move to Amend programs by joining our $28 for the 28th Amendment monthly sustainer campaign. Pledge $28 a month and help make the We the People Amendment our 28th Amendment to the Constitution. To sign up, visit movetoamend.org/donate and click on Recurring Donations to sign up.
So maybe this will be the last thing we'll talk about. Eleanor, you already mentioned it, but let's discuss the charging elephant in the room, the possibility of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, as it is called, and the potential for it to pass in the lame duck session of Congress. Obama is for it and wants to see it happen. Hillary Clinton was originally for it and then supposedly changed her mind. Supposedly Trump actually won't let it go through, so we're in an interesting situation. But the potential for it to happen before the end of the year is something that we should be concerned about. So, Eleanor, I know you've been working on this. Can you not assume maybe that our listeners completely understand the TPP, but probably know a little bit about it, but just a little background, and then also what is happening to make sure it doesn't pass before the next Congress and Trump takes office, et cetera?
Sure. So the TPP is basically NAFTA on steroids, and I'm sure people know about NAFTA. It's the trade deal that's responsible for sucking hundreds of thousands of jobs out of this country and pushing the middle class into poverty, the poverty class into the streets, et cetera, et cetera. And what the TPP is, it's a 12-country trade deal that is built by the corporations, for the corporations and of the corporations. And possibly, you know, they're basically, I think, if it was single-sided, it would be almost up to my shoulders if you printed it out. It's thousands of pages. Congress wasn't allowed to look at it for the longest time, and then they weren't allowed to. They had to go into a sealed room, no cameras, no phones, no anything. They weren't allowed to talk about it. So this is a highly secretive trade deal that was organized by corporate lawyers and lobbyists. And basically, the work that is happening, and it has to do with every issue. I can very cleanly say that it's everybody's issue, because it has to do with everything from digital rights and what you post on Facebook to health, to the air you breathe, water, land. Something that's really interesting that I'd also talked about in my show today was that the ISDS, International Dispute, I can't remember what it's, I'm horrible at these things, but ISDS is basically an international corporate court, and what it allows for is it allows for corporations to sue a sovereign country for loss of profit, even if that profit is potential. So, for example, right now, and you can go to a court, there's a court here in D.C. that hears these trials, and you can go to their website, and on there it says, for example, TransCanada is now in litigation with the United States of America over that portion of the Keystone Pipeline that was vetoed earlier this year. And then it says, this
this trial is made possible by NAFTA. And so there's this long list, and on the one side it's corporations like TransCanada, on the other side it's sovereign countries that are being sued for wanting to protect their land, their water, their human rights, their digital rights, you name it, and this will be a norm. And guess what? The corporations usually win. And this is what NAFTA has wrought, and NAFTA on steroids is a Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that's why it's so vital for us to stop it. And, I mean, I hate to say that there's a silver lining to Trump in any kind of way, but this might just be it, because I never believed Hillary when she said she didn't like it. And so the only thing that we can do now is, again, next week we're going to be pushing very hard to make sure that if the Trans-Pacific Partnership does come up for a vote, and McConnell has said that he's doubtful, or McConnell and Ryan have said that they're doubtful because they don't think they have the votes, but Obama was on a phone call with McConnell even today, I believe, trying to get him to push this onto the lame duck session schedule. So it's vital that we stand up to power, and that's what the No Lame Duck Uprising that's happening next week in D.C. is all about.
So
is there a place
think...
where folks can go to plug in or to offer support?
Oh, yeah,
support?
Absolutely. So you can go to flushthetpp.org, and you can also find out more about the actual schedule of events, and there's lodging available, and we're trying to coordinate ride shares as well. That's flushthetpp.org/register.
Thanks.
And those are, so there's a big event in D.C., but events are also being organized elsewhere. That's my understanding. Is that correct? So
yes, I mean, there
you can
are,
participate
there are
whether you're on the East Coast or not.
There are ongoing events all over the place, but I really will stress that that it's very important right now to bring people to D.C. because, of course, this is where the lame duck session is going to happen. So if you're at all capable of getting to D.C., I really, really will urge you to do so. Of course, organizing locally is not to be snubbed. So if that's what you're capable of doing, then I would definitely ask you to do that. And there are also, if you go to Flush the TPP's website, there are tools that will tell you how to best organize in your local community and even make your community a TPP-free zone.
Cool. It's imperative to pass that. I want to underscore that. Caitlin?
Do not pass that.
Do not pass that, right?
No, that's what you meant.
Sorry. And for Move to Amend supporters and listeners, affiliates, volunteers, it very much is part of our strategy to win our amendment. Its passage would make it much more difficult for us to achieve our democracy building goals with this corporate global structure over the top of us. So it's important for us to join with all the many global activists who have been out in the streets of major cities involved with this deal to be responsive during this lame duck session in terms of stopping this thing.
And
yeah,
the
anyway.
TPP is also, it's way more than just trade. It's about deregulating Wall Street as well, which is, of course, a big hurdle to any sort of amendment constricting the flow of money into our political system. So, yeah, I mean, the TPP, when they say it's NAFTA on steroids, it's not just dealing with the issues of trade. It's dealing with our entire political structure.
Well, yeah, it's really a global governance system governed by corporations, and we already have that happening through corporate money in U.S. and other elections, but it would codify and enshrine it. And I don't want to say that the We the People Amendment, you know, wouldn't even make sense if the DPP passes. That's what some people have said and are concerned about, but it certainly takes the paradigm of corporate rights over the rights of communities and people and the environment, and would make it so that is what the United States and all the governments that are signed on to the TPP are committed to. And so we have an obligation to end it because it is taking what we have going on here with corporate rule in the United States and enshrining it in a global way for much of the world. And it also would really set us back of, you know, our Move to Amend struggle here and make our constitution a lot less relevant because it would be superseded by the TPP. So we've got to make sure it doesn't move forward.
And that is all the time we have. Lee and Eleanor, thank you both so much for speaking truth to power in your other in your lives. Elevating the voice of the people over corporate-owned media propaganda is a truly important function. And we thank you for joining us tonight. Will you please let our listeners know where they can find you and how to stay in touch?
Sure. Every episode of Redacted Tonight, two a week, comes out at, you watch it on RT America or youtube.com/redactedtonight. And actually tomorrow I talk to two election fraud specialists, Greg Pallast and Mark Crispin Miller, and people can see that at youtube.com/redactedtonight or at leecamp.net.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Activist Eleanor, and my site that is sort of an umbrella for all the work that I do, from the spoken word to the show, is artkillingapathy.com. And you can catch the show on Free Speech TV and their channels, Roku, Amazon Fire, and also on Occupy.com/ActOut. And you can find us on Facebook /ActOutOnOccupy and the same handle on Twitter.
Thank you so much to both of you for being here tonight and for also all of your wise words over the course of this election, and we know you'll be with it beyond. So I'm sure we'll be in touch and find other ways to continue this conversation. Before we end, we wanted to offer a couple bits of information to let you know where Move to Amend goes next. We're coming up on the end of the year, and so we're looking at the year ahead. As we've already talked about, we're targeting some particular Congress members that we want to see come on to the We the People Amendment in this congressional session to set us up well for next year when the amendment is reintroduced. And so please stay tuned for how you can help us with that. I want to remind folks that Move to Amend is structured around local affiliates, which is what we call our local chapters, led by volunteers all over the country. We had some phenomenal Move to Amend volunteers and affiliate leaders who we spoke with in the first half hour of the show. And if you're interested in getting involved, now is a great time. And you can find more information at movetoamend.org. You can sign up to volunteer, and then we'll call you and talk about how you can plug in. You can also see which groups are local near you and connect with a group near you. And I also want to point out that Move to Amend, what we call our movement education program, is an internal leadership development program for all of our leaders that covers issues of looking at movement history and learning from, you know, those who have come before us and have amended the Constitution before and built social justice movements, but also looking at how we can reach across divides and work with folks who we don't. This is an extremely segregated country, racially, class-wise, ideologically. And every time we have a presidential election, that is shown more clearly. And this one was, you know, an extreme example of that. And so, so much of what I see, you know, for example, on Facebook, folks talking about today is how we're kind of at a loss for how to talk to each other at this point. That's so important for building a movement. The outrage that this election showed is completely justified, and yet it is being directed at in many ways the wrong people. So how do we redirect and aim it correctly at corporate rule and the ruling elite that are the ones who are in charge and the ones who are benefiting from the status quo? And so if folks are feeling like you're struggling with that, know that Move to Amend is actually a place where we take it very seriously for our leadership at the local and national level to understand that better and to learn from each other. Because the only way this is going to happen is by building a mass movement. It's not about who is in the White House. It's not about who's in Congress. It's about a mass movement that makes our elected officials speak on our behalf, and if they don't, gets rid of them and replaces them with people who will, and those people will have to come from our ranks. And so that's where we go in 2017. And I think Laura is going to mention a couple of the particular actions that we are looking at for January. That's moved to a men's birthday because that's the anniversary of Citizens United.
And that's, of course, one of the things that's happening in January. We'll be, of course, providing more information about exactly what we'll be doing to observe our anniversary, which is the same date as Citizens United. Part of that will include Occupy inauguration. Move to Amend has a big role in this event, which obviously is taking place in Washington, D.C., January 20th and 21st. And this will be obviously rally and protest and learning experience and more march, and more information will be forthcoming on that as details become available. And as always, Move to Amend in the new year will be looking at our 10-year strategy and working towards reaching, I can't even remember the number. Caitlin, how many are we on for next year for our co-sponsors?
35. More than that, and we need to get it introduced for the first time in the Senate, and of course it's not all about what goes on in Washington D.C. So growing our movement numbers, growing our affiliate base, there's a lot of work to do to continue this march forward, and I just see so many people despairing, and I think there's really good reason to take stock and to come to grips with what happened last night and what's been going on over the last few years as we've had this, you know, really awful election in so many ways. And at the same time, you know, it doesn't really change Move to Amend's path, and so much of the work that we're doing would have been picked up by either candidate and just continued on. And so our resistance needs to do the same. And so, you know, let's analyze what we learned from last night and the last few years, and use it to go forward more intelligently, more strategically, and more powerfully.
And to that, I want to say that I was very grateful, and this is my personal testimony. I was very grateful this morning to wake up and know that I had work ahead of me to do with Move to Amend and this democracy building coalition that we've undertaken. It was something I could grab onto even in the midst of my stun. I was just stunned. And that's an important thing. So as people, you know, come to terms with this, you know, find something that you can put your energy into. Don't despair. There's a lot of good people doing great work, and we are righteous. We are on the path of righteousness. And with that, I would like to thank all of the guests we had on our show today. We had such a full boat, and I especially want to thank Caitlin for making time in her exceedingly busy schedule to be with us tonight.
My pleasure.
And I hope we can do it again. And I invite our listeners to tune in over the next 3 weeks to hear some of the best episodes of 2016. We'll be returning on December 8th with a new episode exploring the Dakota Access Pipeline Resistance and Standing Rock Water Protectors, organized and led by the largest coalition of Indigenous peoples in modern history. Please join us.
I'm so glad we're going to be doing that show, because as several of my friends who are Native American pointed out today on Facebook and just in discussions, on one hand, there's reason to be stunned from last night. And on the other hand, looking around at what this country really is rooted a lot in what it's founded in. And I didn't see any Native folks who expressed surprise. I heard them all saying, yeah, this is America. So it'll be great to be talking with folks over that show and the very exciting work that's going on in the Dakotas. So that's it for our edition of Move to Amend Reports. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a great week. Be in touch at movetoamend.org.
Move to Amend Reports was created and brought to you by Move to Amend. Produced by national team members Keon Bliss, Laura Bonham, Egberto Willis, and Caitlin Saposi-Belknap, with the assistance of Renee Babcock. and with contributions from Move to Amend staff and affiliates. Opening theme entitled Move to Amend, performed by Shimako Noble and produced by Soul Circuitry.